Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rare Bird Radio. I'm Mary Tabor, author of the recently released novel Who by Fire. My guest today is the incredible journalist and diviner of the digital revolution, Jackie Cuban. Jackie Cuban is Chief Communities Officer and Executive Editor and the architect, meaning she built it and they came, of the communities at the Washington Times. Some 130 writers came, columnists and journalists from all over the world who write for this digital site that falls under the purview of the Washington Times. Jackie's heart is big enough to hold the world. I'm now totally convinced of that. She's the best manager I have ever worked for, and here's why. First, she finds out what you're good at, and then she makes sure that you do just that. She even answers her phone when you think your heart might break because no one is listening and wants to edit that line that you think, right or wrong, sings. She never sleeps, because she's running a digital arm of the Washington Times, a newspaper that never sleeps in hard copy or on the internet. And get this, listeners. Jackie has homeschooled her son for a good part of his education. We've got to talk about that and find out how she fit that in. When I get to talk to Jackie Cuban, I feel as if I've just been hugged. And then there's this. Nowhere else in the world of journalism would I be able to write the lyric essay on love of all things for a deadly serious publication. She's a miracle, and she's with me today. Jackie Cuban, welcome to Rare Bird Radio.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, I'm so glad to have you because we weren't easy to get. First cue, Jackie. Can you begin by giving us a brief history of how the communities, these independent voices at the Washington Times, came to be? You know, maybe the germ of the idea, anything you can share about how you made it happen.
Well, Mary, I'll tell you a little known story that will go right to your heart with your focus on love. First, thank you for the wonderful things that you've said about me. I'll try to live up to them. The communities came about in 2009, late 2008, when I was watching my son, who's now 13, and seeing him start to communicate with people around the world online.
Mm-hmm.
I was selling eBay, and I was starting to have these conversations with people all around the world. They were by text, but I was talking to people that I never would have thought that I would have talked to and shared things with them, because we would have conversations, and I would find that they would send me T-shirts and trinkets and things from their countries. And it became this just fascinating vehicle for me to step out of Washington, D.C. And I am a traveler. I'm a travel writer. That's what I do. I'm a wandering soul.
I know. Fuck me, Jamaica. I've read the articles.
Well, there's a few of them out there. But I got very, very excited over doing this. And I one day was watching the news, as I'm watching today, and saw the horrible things that are going on in this world. And I believe in women very, very strongly. I believe in women of all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all religions. I believe in women. I think that the salvation of our humanity is in women. And I got to thinking, we could have a national and international conversation amongst women if we had a website where women in Kazakhstan or Russia or Iran or Israel or Dallas or California or West Palm Beach or you in Washington, D.C., where we could all get together and start having a conversation.
And just so we all know, we're two women talking to one another, but there are a lot of men writing for this.
There's many, many men. This is just how it started. But that's how I came up with the structure of how the communities would work, that it would be independent people with independent voices coming into a place where they were comfortable to speak the way they wanted and needed to speak. And that's where it all started. It became its genesis is an international conversation on love that I wanted to have, and I still want to have someday, to get women, because I think we can stop some of the horrible things in this world if women will just stand up and say, you know, no, we're not going to do that anymore.
So how do you get hooked onto the Washington Times? How does that happen? That's a great platform to be associated with. I mean, it's big.
It's the Washington Times is an excellent voice in conservative media. They've been around almost 30 years. They've been in Washington, D.C. Their founder is an individual who we lost last year, who has been a champion for human rights and the rights of women. Many people know nothing about the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, and no, I'm not a member of the church. That's always the first question I get. But he really was a champion.
I wasn't going to ask you that. Me either, by the way. Okay.
But just so all the folks out there listening know. But he really was a champion. He really was a prophet and someone who spoke strongly for the rights of people. He grew up in communist Korea. He suffered at the hands of the communist Koreans at a time. And out of this came his great love and the fact that he knew he could change things. So really, it makes 100% sense that we're there on an emotional level.
Jackie, did you get to meet him?
I have never met the Reverend. I've seen him speak. My husband has met him. And from those that I've spoken to, he was a very dynamic an incredible person. But anybody that has a deep faith, I find to be awe-inspiring because I don't share that type of religious faith. So when I meet people that do have it, I'm a little jealous and I'm a little awestruck by them because I do respect it so much. I think it's just a wonderful thing if someone can say, I believe this.
At one point, the funding for the Washington Times, which is the communities, is separate but under, right? So you might want to...
We're under their banner. And the way that happened was, and this gets into a little bit of boring internet history. Back in 2008, all the major metropolitan newspapers were gravitating over towards the online arena. And we could go into whole long conversations about why that was good and why that was bad. But they were all going there, and one of the things that they were all trying to do is to try and start these blogs, these groups of people that were speaking, because you had to be living under a rock not to know that this was something that was coming, was going to be very, very important in the future as a future of online media and journalism and communication started, because it's no longer just about quote-unquote journalism.
Can I interrupt and ask you a question related to that? I mean, this is clearly no blog, so clearly you've got some real pros doing some editing and handling stuff here. So can you talk about that, too, how the shift occurred from, you know, you have a lot of writers, and not all of them, I'm a novelist, for instance, and I'm writing for you.
And a brilliant novelist.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
One of the few that I've actually had a chance to sit and read, new novels that I've had a chance to sit and read over the last year, and absolutely found your latest story to be just so incredibly moving. The way that it brings up the question of where does allegiance lie? How are we supposed to feel about someone we love, but yet someone who has maybe not really lived up to what we would have liked them to have been?
Jackie's talking about Who by Fire. No, we've never talked about Who by Fire on this show.
Because I think one of the things that challenges us today in the busy lives that we lead is that we have to really learn to accept and embrace unconditional love and the ability to love regardless of who someone might be and the way they might act. There are things about people we love, and those are the things we have to remember, and I think that's what Who by Fire reminded me of, is that we have to remember that there are things that brought us to this person, and they might not always be whom we want them to be 100% of the time, but that's okay. We can still love them.
And that's what it's about. You must be a really great mother. Can we talk a little bit about, we'll come back. I want to come back to the communities and your work there with all of the editors and writers.
The communities is kind of based on your book, on Who by Fire, and the concepts that I brought out of Who by Fire. And that is that when all of these newspapers were trying to bring in these voices, and I include Huffington Post into this and The Examiner and this type of thing, but, you know, trying to get these blocks, they forgot to do one thing. Every last one of those publications has forgotten to do one thing, and that is respect the writer. They wanted these voices. They needed these voices. They desired these voices. People want to read these voices, but they forgot to respect the voice. And at the communities, that respect is working with professionals such as Lisa Ruth, Catherine Poe, Andrea Poe, Terry Ponick, Jim Picht. These people are so incredibly brilliant that they amaze me every day.
And Terry Ponick is my editor, I'd like to say to those listening, and you should read him. He's also been wonderful because he and Jackie have protected my voice. It's why I keep writing for them. I can't tell you what that means to someone like me who's not a trained journalist.
But what is the concept of a trained journalist? As a trained journalist, and I get into this conversation quite a bit with traditional editors, what is a trained journalist? Are you a trained journalist because you went to journalism school? Well, I know lots of people who went to journalism school that can't write themselves out of a tissue bag.
Yeah,
so
no,
that doesn't make you a journalist. Are you a trained journalist because you have a plastic blue card from the Society of Professional Journalism? No, not really, because, again, I know lots of writers.
Actually, you see, in the few newspapers we have left, like the Washington Times, the Washington Post, and the New York Times, these major publications and the LA Times are hiring reporters who are trained economists, trained scientists. You know, their expertise actually hasn't been journalism school; it's been an expertise, a study of a subject matter, and works. Many of them have worked in that world too.
That's exactly the world they're writing about. That's exactly it. A journalist, if someone says to me, what is a journalist? I would say a journalist is someone who is an expert on whatever it is they want to be an expert at, whether it's love or politics or anything you want to come up with. We have so many writers. Economics that Terry writes about, classical music that Terry writes about. You mentioned Terry. I love to read Terry's stuff. I understand what's going on in Wall Street. In a few-minute read, if I read Morning Market Maven, I have a question about something, I can go to Terry's column, Prudent Man, and absolutely understand what's going on in the headlines, in the economic headlines.
And he's now writing every day, which is pretty amazing.
He writes every single day. Morning Market Maven, you need to go see it if you want to have an understanding of what's going on in investments and what does it mean. What did this whole Apple crash mean last week?
Yeah, I read that one.
What do these things mean? How do they affect us? It's easy, it's accessible, and the neat thing about the communities is that on every page, whether it's Mary's or Terry's or whomever's, there's a little Ask Me a Question. So if you don't understand something, you just have to click that button, and you can ask them. Oh, it's not printed on the page, so you can ask them anything you want, and they will get back to you.
And there's this amazing little box at the top of the community site. After you land on the homepage of the Washington Times, and then if you end up over at the communities, and a lot of people do. How many do, by the way? Before I ask this question, what's your readership? Do you know?
Our readership at the end of the last quarter, we were between 2.5 and 2.7 million readers per month just at our section, which is a lot. Now, I want you to think about this when you think about growing. And for anybody out there who's thinking about growing their website, whether it's a website for their book or a website for a business idea that they have, stability is one of the most important things you can give to a website. You don't want big spikes. You want to grow your readership at a steady rate. We grow at about 15 to 16% through 2012 every single month.
What's the year you actually started? Can you repeat that again? I know you said it earlier.
January 20, January 2010 was our launch date. January 2011, I had 250,000 page views per month. January 2012, I had 1 million page views. And the end of 2012, we had 2.7 million page views. We dropped back with December and, you know, January because you have the holidays and all that stuff. So readership slides back a little bit.
Yeah.
But right now we're looking for this month at finishing off somewhere in the 2.5 million page views category for this. And my goal is world domination and 10 million page views by the end of the year.
World domination, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Why not? You know? And there
why
is
not?
This little box at the top. Now, when you and I tell you about this little box, if you're listening, you need to read these columns in order to understand what's going on. Because I'll give you the box says, write for us. Isn't that what that box says, Jackie?
Yeah, it says right.
And so, and I'm just going to tell a little story, which I didn't think I was going to tell, but I'm going to tell this little story anyway. This is how I got to write for Jackie. I long ago met a guy named Vashko Kollmeyer, who writes a column for Jackie. I don't share his religious or political views, but he's been a great supporter and encourager of my creative work. He's read my work. He's been in my corner for a number of years, and we share a profound belief in the open heart. And he introduced us. That is how I got into this. This would never happen anywhere else.
No. And that's where most of my writers come from. I find writers in the oddest places. I have some writers who left Rick Townley, who writes for Lisa Ruth under Global, and whose voice I love, and I've been love watching it develop. He kept leaving comments on Facebook, and I finally tracked him down and saw that he had a background in journalism. And that he was kind of starting to get back into it a little bit. And, you know, I contacted him out, and I said, why don't you come? Why don't you give it a try? Throw your hat back in the ring. It doesn't do you any good to keep screaming from your own basement.
You don't have to have a political view that is conservative to write for this.
Oh, no.
Group.
Politics is a small portion of what we do. We have family.
It
we
is.
We have religion. We have business, we have health and science. I have people who family, travel, food. We have everything you could possibly want to read about. You can, I think, find at the communities. And if you can't find it, let me know. Send me an email, jcuban@washingtontimes.com, or give me a call, 301-503-4533, and let's talk about it. Maybe you've got a great column in you that it's time to start out. I'm very much a let's go, jump in, both feet, into the deep end kind of person.
You
and
sure
we just
are.
Give it a try.
You sure are. And you cover such a range. You know, we talked about travel, and I know you do have another site called Donna Tempe.
Donne Tempo.
Also,
it stands for Woman's Time. It's an Italian term for Woman's Time, Donne Belle.
I didn't know
excuse
that.
Excuse my horrible Italian accent.
It's okay.
And tempo is time. And Donna Tempo was really the first manifestation of that concept that I was talking about before, where I was trying to get these women going in an international conversation.
And you yourself have written on Led Zeppelin music, Jethro Tull.
Mm-hmm.
You've interviewed Harry Connick Jr.
Mm-hmm.
on movies. One of the absolutely best pieces I've ever read was on Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction and the incredible Blu-ray extras on that DVD. And boy, does this woman know how to write a lead. Here's the lead of that article. Do you know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in France? Vincent Vega asks his partner, Jules Winfield, in one of the most instantly memorable movie lines from the 20th century cinema. How about that, guys?
Well,
I mean, you are amazing. What you cover.
It's a very, very big world out there. And in this last year, when Sandy Hook broke, I wrote about Sandy Hook. I spent 3 days writing about Sandy Hook. I was probably first to page over most of the media because I do listen to CNN or MSNBC or some of the talking heads. I always say I like to listen to CNN because they don't scream and yell. It's the only channel where they don't scream and yell.
How did you talk to Jared? I know you've been homeschooling Jared for part of the time. How did you talk to Jared about Sandy Hook?
We've had a lot of interesting conversations about it, and I think the most interesting conversation about it is I wrote a piece following Sandy Hook with the whole gun stuff coming out that said, you know, we do have to grow up as a country. I was just in France, and under the Eiffel Tower, there are armed guards. I was just in Italy, and on every corner, there's armed police. And they're very, very cute in Italy, I might say. But if you go anywhere...
Did you flirt in Italy?
I would never do such a thing. But they were very sweet. They had broad smiles and wonderful, wonderful people. If you haven't been, go to Rome. It's a marvelous place. It's so old it makes you feel young. Wherever we go in the world, we have armed. You know, when I was in Egypt, there's armed guards. When I was in Belize, there's armed guards. They're just there. You don't think about them. They're just there. Yeah, it would be great if we lived in this wonderful place where we didn't have to worry about people who wanted to harm us, but we don't live there. And it's obvious because Beyonce has armed guards and the president has armed guards and anybody who could be a possible target. And then we just have to recognize that we ourselves and our children are possible targets.
This raises a question for me about, let me ask you first about the kinds of things you did with Jared to homeschool him. And then I want to ask this question. I want to follow up for that, that'll follow that. But tell me about how you decided to do that. And I know that you and your husband, because I was able to find by Googling you, that you have actually written some curriculum for homeschooling.
I was an older mom. I was 41 when I had Jared. When I found out I was pregnant, after I got over the shock, because I didn't think it was something that was going to happen in my world, married 13 years, you know, after I got over the shock that I was pregnant, I was 3 months pregnant before I knew I was pregnant, the first question I asked my husband was, how are we possibly going to put him into school? I'm 41 years old, and I tell you right now, I know more about life than any 21-year-old that's teaching in the public school.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. And my husband's brilliant, and he's smart, and he drills down things very, very quickly. And he looked at me, and he said, you'll homeschool him. And he walked out of the room. And that's how it happened.
How long did you do it for?
Jared has gone into seventh grade this year at Julius West, which is an international baccalaureate public school in Montgomery County, this year for the first time. It's been an adjustment. He's handled it very, very well, much better than his mother. He's brilliant. He enjoys school.
Takes a lot of courage to do that when you haven't ever been in the school situation before.
To go from waking up and learning at your leisure. I mean, we had classes and we had things and deadlines and stuff like that, but it's not anything like you get in a school situation. To go from that to 1,300 other kids running down the hallways at one time, all rushing around. I'm in awe of my son.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. I needed to come down. Well, when I
is
went
it a
to
public, is he in public school?
He's in a public school.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, it's working out well for me. He has excellent teachers at that school. They have absolutely brilliant teachers that really do care about the kids. I couldn't be happier with the individual teachers.
You have the great desire to go in and watch?
No, absolutely not. That's his world. He doesn't want me anywhere near his world. He doesn't want me interfering with his world, and that needs to be his place.
That defines the way, in many ways, the way you manage the communities. There is a way in which you're very hands-on, but there's also a way in which, as I said in the intro, you really do let people do what they really want to do and are good at doing.
I see no reason to stop someone from defining who they are and what they want to do or accomplish, because I am constantly amazed, and this is why I've never done an interview before, because I find other people to be so brilliant. There's that word again. It's my word for this year. I find other people to be so brilliant and so interesting in what they have to say. And it's why I can... Yesterday I did an interview with a jazz pianist who's been in the Washington, D.C. area for many, many, many decades, 50-plus years. He's going to be appearing at Wolf Trap. His name is John Eaton. And I absolutely enjoyed our conversation. We talked for an hour and a half, and I learned so much about music and his perspective and his time and place in history. His time and place in history is amazing. You look at Vance Garnett, who's one of our writers. His time and place in history is amazing.
I love this columnist, by the way. This is an older guy who's writing really great stuff. I mean, it's terrific.
It's phenomenal. And one of the neat things about the community is our youngest writer is 10. I have a couple writers who are in high school.
Who's writing who's 10?
His name is Harlan Picht. He's Jim Picht's, Dr. Picht's son, Harlan. And he's a brilliant little writer.
What's the 10-year-old writing about, Jackie?
Museums, things he does. You know, it's not real frequent because he's 10. But 10-year-old kids have a lot to say. When I started Arjuna Subramanian, he's a fencer. I know my son's a fencer, and they fence, a little plug for DC fencing. Arjuna wanted to start writing about fencing, and then he went from fencing to just sports in general. When he was 12, maybe, I took him down to spring training down here in Florida, in Tampa. And he got to sit in a press box. So if you go to his page in sports, you see Arjuna's picture. He's actually sitting in the press box. It's a, you know, at that time, little kid. He's a little bit older now. You know, and I find my oldest contributors are in their late 70s.
So Vance is up in that category.
I'm not sure how old Vance is. I know how old some other folks are, but you know, we are not ageists by any means.
That's for sure. And the other thing is, it's really, you know, I'm a born and bred, I guess you would call me an FDR Democrat, and I'm writing for the Washington Times, is considered a conservative publication. I'm not writing on politics, but the fact is that this is a place where all voices are getting heard in an amazing way, and I think that's been such a gift that you've done for these independent voices in the communities. It is just amazing to look at this publication.
Well, we have Catherine Poe, who writes Ad Lib, which is, guess what, liberal. Catherine is brilliant. She's one of our editors. She started as a writer. She's now an editor. She's a past president of now, I believe, the Long Island chapter. I'm not quite sure, but it was somewhere on the East Coast here. And she's brilliant. We have Tom Mullen, who definitely has a voice that is libertarian. And Tom is down here in Florida as well. He's on the other coast. He's out in Tampa. Danny DeGracia, he's in Hawaii. And he's conservative, moderate, but definitely libertarian. Huge fan of Kerry Johnson.
With all the time difference here, how do you get to communicate with everybody? How do you manage that? So is email the people?
Emails, late nights,
you do never
early
speak.
Mornings. You know, you manage. You figure out. Skype is a wonderful thing for my writers who are international. Lisa Ruth. Manages. She's really our executive editor these days, as if I've gone more into the business end of things. And she manages our global writers, and we have writers in Pakistan, we have writers in Uganda, we have Anwar Abdallah, who's here with me now. She lives off Tahrir Square, and if you're interested in Egypt, and that she's going to be starting a series of columns in the next couple weeks here from Tahrir Square. And one of the first stories she's going to do, which I think is going to be fabulous, is she's going to go down and look at the graffiti. But the neat thing about Dr. Abdallah is that she's a historian. So she's going to look at the graffiti not only that's in Egypt today, but also take and look back at the graffiti that has been found on the walls of the pyramids and the ancient buildings.
And listeners, Jackie tried to get me to interview her instead of interviewing Jackie before this radio show began. So I somehow have
managed. She's brilliant.
Well, I've managed to talk to Jackie for almost 30 minutes here, and as I'm about to close, I have a couple things I want to tell you, Jackie Cuban. One of the first things I wrote for you was a brief piece entitled, On 9/11, Don't Be Silent, Speak. In that piece, I know you too. I was so early in the process.
Mary, you have a way of writing that though it's got just this wonderful lyrical flower around it, these little bursts of starlight going around it, it cuts right to the point. And
in that piece, I quote the poet Paul Celan. Mm-hmm. Jackie, in closing, I quote him again in your honor, and I acknowledge that it may seem odd to address a journalist par excellence, although I'm not sure journalist is the way I don't know what to call you. I think we'll call you the magical diviner the way I did in the intro.
Why don't you just call me Jackie?
And I'm just going to call you Jackie. Jackie Celan says, poems are making towards something standing open, occupiable, stricken by, and seeking reality. Jackie, I know you have business-like ends to meet and address every day. But you do that work in the absolute belief of that seeking through language. And I thank you, Jackie, for connecting with me through my column, and God bless you for connecting with me through this interview. Thank you, Jackie Cuban, for talking with me today.
Absolutely enjoyed being with you, Mary. It is, as I said, my first and probably my last, unless you can talk me into coming back again.
I might work on it. I
just
think we're going to get reactions to this interview. We'll see.
We just remember, 130 writers, they're all brilliant, you know. Every single one of them has something to say, and every one of them has something to say that's important and valid to somebody somewhere. And if you have something to say out there, listeners, get a hold of me. I'm more than happy to talk to you.
You heard her.
Give me a call.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you. Have a great day, everyone.
You
bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
might